to the Healing Grief Podcast with Catherine Churchill, and regularly joined by a variety of different guests, all helping you travel through your journey of grief.
Hi everyone, it's Catherine Churchill, and I'm here today with special guest Rudy Hunter. And Rudy will be speaking to us about energy healing tools that you can use for grief. Rudy is an energy healer whose healing techniques have changed the lives of both people and animals all over the world. Rudy began his career as a professional dancer and magician until a back injury changed his life and inspired him to become a bodywork expert and teacher in an effort to learn all he could to help fix his own back. Rudy then went on to help his friends and clients. Today, Rudy not only trains people in his healing modality, but works with clients all over the world, both people and animals, helping them to get out of the physical and emotional pain. So welcome to the show, Rudy.
Hi, Catherine. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on. So today we are going to talk about grief and grief in its many forms. So not just those who are going through grief through losing somebody through death. So grief comes in many different forms. So whether it's job loss, relationship loss, friendship loss, we can grieve over many different things. So Rudy, what do you have to say about grief? Because I consider you an expert on the subject.
Well, thanks. I'm a reluctant expert in my own life, but grief really is not just about when a loved one, a husband, a wife, a partner dies. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. And the next level of terrible is when a cat dies or a dog dies or your horse passes away. And usually, as you've already sort of alluded to, people stop thinking about or using the term grief for anything else where a big loss has been suffered. Because there are some losses that, while they're personally really important and they can trigger a lot of things in us, the outside world often doesn't even recognize that that's a grieving that we're going through. Let me give you a couple of good examples. Not even necessarily just the loss of a job, but the loss of an opportunity. So, for example, if someone was working on their plan to start their own business, let's say 3 months from now, and they've been working on it for quite a while, and they're getting ready, and all the plans are in place, and everything's ready to go, and then suddenly something happens in their life where they have to get redirected. So they can't begin what they were planning, that's a very substantial loss to self-esteem, income, confidence, life plan. It hits a whole bunch of territories. Now, people can usually go, okay, I guess that's grief. But then there's other things. I once worked with a lady who had lost a family heirloom, and she was absolutely torn apart. It was a piece of jewelry from her mom. So there was a lot of guilt, of course, but the guilt was nothing compared to the grief that took her a long time to get over, because it was like you would treat a person or an animal. It's an irreplaceable thing that was never found. So she had to find a way in consciousness after lots of crying, and you know, that's usually what we do when we grieve, to find a way to be okay or to come into a relationship with the loss of that so that it wasn't decimating to her. And she told her friends, and you know, your friends are lovely and they say, oh, you know, we're really sorry. But usually they don't go, you know, Marjorie's really in a little grief spiral there. We should check on her, make sure she's doing okay and find ways to help her.
Yes, it's interesting how people don't recognize that things like that are definitely grief.
Yeah. What's important to us internally is often very different to the rest of the world. But you know, exactly. Look who I'm talking to. You and I both know that.
Yeah, exactly. So Rudy also is going to do a healing on grief today.
I am. We're going to do a little process in the stickiness. Grief is a very sticky set emotional attachments. And there's a lot of dogma around how we should grieve, how long we should grieve, when you're grieving too long, why you should get a grip of yourself and hurry up and get the grieving over with. There's all kinds of stuff that very, very normal, well-meaning people sort of push at us. That's one of the true things I want to do today is to leave folks with a tool for grief that is triggered by trauma. And I know it sounds a little bit like splitting hairs. Sometimes the loss of a family heirloom can be traumatic. Certainly the loss of a loved one who dies can be traumatic. But there are all kinds of triggering things that are set in motion when we suffer a trauma. And let me give you another weird example. Car accidents are fairly common, and it's very rare to meet someone who has gone through either one accident or a series of accidents who can identify for themselves that that's a very easy way to get stuck into specifically a grief spiral. There are people who get literally diverted from their lives because of an accident. You know, they have to go to rehab, or they have to change jobs, or they can't bend over properly, so they have to do things differently. That is a loss of a previous self. That's we're bumping along in our life. We know who we are. We have a good self-image, or we at least have a defined self-image. And then along comes this car intersection bang-up thing that we go through, the accident, the trauma itself. But it forces us to grieve things we can no longer do. And for a lot of people, that's a very sticky series of events to navigate. And I know it sounds like minutiae, but this is where we can get diverted from a sense of knowing who we are. That's why when a lot of accidents happen, a lot of traumatic things happen, our self-confidence and our self-image take a really strong hit. It will also explain, it's easier to see in other people, like your brother-in-law. You know, after he had that fall down the stairs, you've heard that expression, he was never the same, or he was never right afterwards. Mm-hmm. Part of that is the triggering of grief that plays into how he has to change, how he has to leave his old self behind.
That's interesting, And the other thing I was going to say too with that, when something happens, I guess we hold that trauma in our body, and then down the track something else might happen and that trauma comes out as well as the current trauma.
It does indeed. Layer and layer. And one of the remarkable things about us as people is that in a perfect world, which by the way we don't live in, but in a perfect world, we have a trauma, let's say a car accident. The nervous system itself goes, oh, we've got this big mess we got to clean up. If we had our druthers, we would start cleaning that up now. The nervous system would go to work. We'd take time off. That's what recovery is supposed to be. We're supposed to, you know, lie down, take it easy, let the nervous system do its work, and work that out of our system. That usually isn't what happens. Usually what happens is we freak out because there's not enough money coming in because it's affected our income. The people around us are stressed out. We're worried about the future, and we crank and ramp up. So what the nervous system does is it goes, okay, we still have to work this out, but we're going to just delay this. We're going to shove it away in a dark corner for now until there's some stretch of time when we can properly process it out. And you can probably do the math watching people's lives who you know that often that doesn't happen. And we get stacked and layered traumas that are one on top of another. And then those traumatic states tend to not only re-trigger all kinds of things in us, it makes us much more vulnerable for repeat similar traumatic events.
That's so true.
It may explain why Betty in the office is a lovely human being and she's great and lovely, but she has a car accident every 3 years. Like, what the hell is that? That's nothing about Betty. That's just a stack of unresolved traumas looking for attention and expression to process out.
Yeah. Wow.
We like Betty. So.
Yeah. Also, for our listeners that may not be so familiar with this side of the work, and many are. So what about for people? So obviously we've established that trauma is held in the body.
Yeah.
So how do my listeners go about releasing that trauma when something happens to them so that they don't have to go through a repeat pattern or cycle of this trauma?
I'm going to do two things. One is we're going to do a process shortly for specifically that, so they can come back to this recording and listen to the work that I'm going to do. And should there be, along with really good medical care and all of the right important stuff that you need to be doing, they can do this in addition, never as a substitute, so that the not only the body, the nervous system, but the energetic system, which also contains part of the trauma, can start dispersing. And the other tool I'm going to just tell folks about, because it's really easy to go do. They can Google me on YouTube and pull up a host of anti-trauma or trauma dissolution tools that are short videos. So one way or another, get to the energetic work that we're going to be doing so that the trauma doesn't have a long time in your system, because that's really what we're working against. We're working against having it take up space and, you know, squatting in our system. We don't want that.
Yeah. And you have healing tools for grief at rudyhunter.com, just so people who are listening can find you. So did you want to begin your energetic work?
That would be great. So the one promise that listeners need to make, because we're going to be working in the energetic field, and that's new territory and it's relaxing territory, the process we're going to do is really pleasant. But because it's pleasant, you have to promise you're not driving and not operating heavy machinery. That's important. We want you safe and sound. We don't want to create a new trauma. So as long as you're safe and sound, you can do this work really easily. And it's deceptively simple. So I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. We'll set it up, we'll do it, and then it'll be done. And I'd like you not to take my word for any piece of this, because it's important that you trust your own experience, and that'll come from doing the work. So what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you focus on only one trauma and the most bothersome part of that one trauma. So another way to say that is we're not going to work on the 2,700 traumas you've had in the last 10 days or the last 10 years, all as a big clump, because that's too much too fast. We're instead going to pick a specific traumatic event, like that time your brother or your sister threw a plate at your head. We'll use that as an example. And regardless of what the trauma is, there is a moment in the trauma that is the most painful to you. That can be words someone says, like in the brother or sister throwing a plate at your head example. It could be the name they called you, or their tone of voice, or the look on their face, or the fact you had to go to the hospital and have plate shards taken out of your head. There's one part of it that stings the most. That's the place I'm going to have you put your attention for just about a minute or two. It's not going to be long. So I also want to just pre-warn you. If you are dealing with a 10 out of 10 trauma, which I don't recommend, I recommend you start at a 7 or less for the first run through or two until you get used to the process. But if you're going to John Wayne it and go for a 10 out of 10, and the most painful part starts to irritate you, what I'd like you to do is to pull back from it and see it at a long distance. That will help you, in the minute or two we're going to sit quietly together, get through the process without getting super distracted. Did I make that clear? I hope so. All right.
You did. Yeah, I've got it.
Excellent. So We're going to find the one trauma that we're going to work on for, and don't worry, you can come back and you can work on all of them one at a time, but we're going to find the one trauma. We're going to go into the one trauma, find the one piece that has the most stinginess to it. So I'll give you a moment to find that for yourself. And then the hardest part of this work is to follow the next instruction, because all we're going to do is you're going to sit quietly and you're going to just gently redirect your mind to keep putting your attention on that stinging moment. And minds love to wander, so your mind will wander. It will drift away from the stinging moment, and then when you notice you've left, you just gently bring it back. You refocus on the stinging moment. While you're doing that, I'm going to go quiet, and during that quiet, I'll be doing some very specific energetic work to help undo the structure of that sting. That's really all we're doing. All right. So hopefully I've talked long enough so that you've been able to figure out what you're working on and what the stingiest part is. I don't think that's a real word, but it's close enough. So you'll focus on the stingy part. We'll go quiet for just a minute or two. I'll let you know when we're starting, which is shortly. I'll let you know when we're done. It's a good idea, because you're safe and sound, to do this with eyes closed, because you'll get more bang for your buck. All right, so put your attention on the stingy part. We'll get the energy work started for you right now. And then very gently, very easily, allow your attention to come back to here and now. Let go of anything that you were focused on. You might want to have a little stretch or a wiggle around, or maybe even a little yawn. And before you do anything, what I'd like you to do is just notice what is different. I'm fond of saying notice what's arrived and what's left, what's increased and what's diminished. If you started this process, as an example, at a 7 out of 10, the stingiest part was 7 out of 10, three things could have happened. Nothing, or the perception of nothing. It may have increased a little, or it may have decreased a little. So first, let's take the increase. I promise you, if there's a slight increase, in about 20 or 30 seconds from now, there will be a decrease, because that's how this works. If you notice the decrease, that's awesome. That's the direction we want to go in with traumas, especially because we're pulling out the linchpin that holds a traumatic memory together. That's really what we're doing. So you'll notice that that drops by itself, and that starts the dropping process that usually continues for a couple of days. So by tomorrow, or tomorrow when you wake up, or the day after, you can check back in with that stingy part of the memory and notice that there's a diminishment on the way down, which is great. That's what we want. If you didn't notice anything, trust me when I tell you, not only is that perfectly okay, but some of my biggest fans start right there. They usually start the email several days later to me, and it starts, "Well, I sat quietly, it was restful, but I didn't notice any difference." And then they go on to say, "However, by the next morning, I felt happier, or I slept better that night. And a couple of days out, I felt way better." So give yourself some time. I'm not personally attached to how long this takes. It's one of the fastest things I know how to make happen. But it's okay if it takes 20 minutes. It's okay if it doesn't push into your consciousness until the next morning. And Catherine can tell you that's a very common thing.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
No.
I had various experiences with your work. So some things work straight away for me, and other things will work a few days later. I guess it depends, how deep things run for me.
Yep.
Just on the one that you did then, I was thinking of something that was probably a 7, and it's probably gone down to a 4. And also what happened, I was thinking about it, and when you were doing the energetic work, I could see it moving down a tunnel until it got further and further away from me. It's still there, but it's just a tiny dot now.
Right. Yeah, it's like terrible neighbors. They're packing and leaving.
Right.
They're
getting exactly.
My other suggestion, if you're going to do this with friends or loved ones, don't talk about what the trauma is. Even if your husband or your wife or your lover knows about your big traumas, don't talk about what it is. You can talk about the number, like it was a 7 or if it was a, you know, 5, whatever it was. Because we don't want to actively go after really reinstalling the content. What we want to do is we want to pull the drain, the plug out from it so that it can start to unwind. And down the road, you can talk about it at cocktail parties you can go to. You can say, you know, I used to have this terrible, horrible, traumatic memory that was a 7, and I heard this idiot on a nice podcast.
Turned it down to a 1. Yeah.
Hashtag Rudy Hunter the idiot. Made it basically flush down the toilet. So it's important that this work is gentle, because I'm one of the biggest advocates for not re-traumatizing people when they're trying to get rid of icky stuff. We don't want to live through it again. We've already lived through it millions of times in our head, and that's enough. We want it just to go.
So. That's true. That's one of the things I like about your work, is that you don't make people relive things.
Thanks. Yeah, I relive them for everybody in the 80s. So that's enough.
So that was amazing.
Thanks.
You know how much I love your work. So
you're so sweet. Thank you. Well, that work on this recording, it will stay active for you. So if you come back to this a month later or 2 years from now or whenever, that will always be ready to help you. That's part of what I like to do, is salt these things into the world so that there's some tools to help out.
Yeah, so as Rudy said, if you didn't feel anything the first time, or you need to, for some reason, use it again, you can always come back to it.
By all means.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure you're done with the healing now. So the other thing we were going to talk about, because Rudy does work with animals, is animals in grief.
Yes, it's very interesting. About half my practice is working on animals. I work on people and animals who've suffered trauma. So I do a lot of work in the animal kingdom. And as a lifelong crazy animal lover, it surprises me when people are surprised by the idea that animals suffer grief. Because it seems, not only to me, it seems obvious and it seems natural, but I guess if you've never really thought of it, or you're not looking at animals a lot as I am, maybe it just didn't come up. I don't know.
You and I were talking before the show, and I was telling you about how my family had a dog who passed away. This was when I was much younger, and we had another dog too, and after the dog passed away, the other dog started grieving to the point where she turned white. So her tan fur completely turned white. So, yeah. And she actually passed away a few months after that. So can you talk a little bit about that? So what might have caused her to turn white?
Well, I have an amazingly similar story. And if you ask around your friends, you'll probably hear some wacky sounding stories specifically related to grief. When the body doesn't know what to do with itself. And grief is one of those states where we are so vulnerable that lots of weird autonomic things can happen. I have a friend and a neighbor that lives in my town, and they were due to move into a house. They've lived in their previous house for donkey's years, and at the very last, they had no other plan. This is what's important about this. At the very last minute, the deal fell through, and it looked rock solid. Everything was in place. And because of a very bizarre set of circumstances, the deal fell through. They're not spring chickens. So they were suddenly terrified and faced with this idea that they were going to be some version of homeless or not going to be able to live in a house that they had lived in for, that they were used to living in for so long. A terrible, stressful environment to be sure, but here's what his body did. He lost every hair on his body, face, full body, everything. Like a porcupine expelling whatever they are, stingers. Wow. Everything fell out. So that sort of autonomic response is a fear response. It's propelled by grief, and it's the kidney meridian. It's our very life force meridian that goes into panic. That's when there's a loss of hair, when there's a decoloration of hair, as has happened with the dog, that's the kidney meridian going, life is in question. And that's the physical manifestation of it. And you've heard those expressions. If you think about our language, when we're scared, we turn white as a ghost, don't we?
Yeah, that's true.
Our tan fur that we've had our whole life as a dog suddenly goes white. And then quickly, I'm out of here. I can't deal with the sustaining of life.
Right. And I was thinking too, we actually did get another dog for her to help cope, but that didn't work. She was... Yeah. Yeah, it was like her whole life force left.
Mm. Yeah. So animals grieve very honestly and very directly. One of the things that I've seen again and again and again, and I work with every species. So I work with donkeys and racehorses and lots of dogs. I'm a big dog fan. I work with cats and ferrets and you name it. I worked with wolves. I mean, it's neat to be able to work across the species line. There's a thing that I learned from animals, and it took me a long time to understand what their behavior was trying to tell me. And I want to pass it on because I think it's really useful. When we lose an opportunity or lose a person or lose an animal, we are hit with all of the grieving that we're all very familiar with. The animals feel no less, but I've seen behavior that suggests they go a step further, not just to feel the loss and to miss the physical presence. I've seen behavior that suggests that there's a kind of honoring of the body and the scent and the personality of the animal that they are grieving. So one of the really useful, like I've seen, let me give you a concrete example. When a litter mate or a couple of an animal has passed away, the survivor will often, for either a short or long period of time, bow near the body. And makes me tear up because I've seen some beautiful moments. But there's a real honoring and a real reverence at the physical body. So there's that, and I've seen it again and again in different species. And I've noticed that when there are environments where they don't have access to the body, like the body's been taken away or the body's been injured, and there hasn't been the connection by scent of the other animal to honor the body, that's the worst grief. Because there's no proof, there's no physicality, there's nowhere to smell the difference. Because death has a smell. We know that. And by the way, if you don't know that, death has a smell.
It does have a smell, yeah.
And dogs and lots of other animals communicate every part of their life, including their passing, through the smell. And if the survivors are robbed of that opportunity, they're suddenly just a big question. So that's a kind of grief that is more challenging to resolve.
Interesting, because my dog we were talking about didn't have that closure because we had to get the other dog put to sleep at the vet. So she never got to see her again. So that's very interesting. And we actually...
And if you think it from our point of view... Oh, sorry. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, we actually probably for our own grief had to take away a lot of the things that the dog had owned.
So
that didn't help. So we made many mistakes.
we're all allowed to do that. Mm. But from the animal's point of view, that's like somebody being beamed up with no explanation. Their dish is gone, the collar's gone, the body's gone. What the hell happened? Must have been aliens, right? So one of the things that I'll admit to, and I don't care because I'm a lifelong animal lover, I hold on to the collars, especially the collars of my dogs. I've held on to them for years. And it's for the same reason that when we lose a loved one, we go smell their shirt. We do this because we go through the olfactory system. It's the shortest neural pathway in the body. It's the most direct pathway to the brain. And that smell, we do it too, even though we're, quote unquote, civilized and we walk upright. We stick our nose to smell our loved one. And when they're not here, that's the closest neurological connection we can have to them on a physical level. It's the same thing why a certain perfume that your mother always wore, you can be walking through a department store and boom, mom's there, because there's that re-triggering in the nervous system. So the smell of my dogs, it's just like smelling a loved one.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
And it's okay to make mistakes. Don't worry.
I've learned. Now I'm grown up and can have my own dogs. And I've definitely learned from them. And we'll hold on to collars and things. But I think I came from a family that liked to push the grief under. So
grief is hard. Everybody hates it because it's painful.
Yeah.
We all struggle with it.
Yeah, well, we've covered so much today for people and animals. And so I'm sure my listeners, I know my listeners will get so much out of this on so many levels. So people can find you at huntershealingcalls.com and rudyhunter.com.
Right.
So is it both websites? Rudy is one of my favorite people.
And it's completely mutual. I love to be with you.
Well, thank you.
I love to hang out, and just the fact we get to talk about the crazy stuff.
Strange things. Weird.
But the important stuff. Yeah.
That's true.
I'm just thrilled to be here with you. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rudy. And thanks to my listeners.